Was that a reference at the It trailer floating?
Yeah, I mean, that was from the original It. It's like, down here we all float.
He's in the sewer.
Yeah.
Georgie.
Yeah, if a clown approached me from a sewer drain, that's not really the most appealing offer. I don't think most kids would respond well to that, so I feel like he was kind of, that might have been survival of the fittest type situation. That child was not fit to survive. Especially in the new version, you see the trailer, he runs into the street barricade thing. It's like, not the cream of the crop, this kid. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Frustrated Grad Podcast. I am your host, Zach Hughes, the black dude who, if you ask me, is overrated. And I'm welcoming my co-host, writer, movie fan, wrestling fan, who thinks you deserve it, Tony Hoffman.
You deserve it, and what's the other one that's what? And
yeah.
CM Punk for no reason, even during the female matches.
Yeah, and a new one that might be catching on. It's going to take the world by storm. Fuck you, Roman. So
fuck you, Roman. Yeah. You only make him stronger.
Yeah, he feeds off of that.
Yeah, when you show any emotion, that's whether it's bad or good, just they're not going to go away.
Yeah, that's the thing that's the, I guess, what some apologists and some commentators will say, like, whether you boo or hate him, if you're showing emotion, that means you care one way or the other. I was like, I don't know about that.
The worst thing you can do is say nothing.
Yeah, exactly. And I've seen some people on wrestling podcasts talk about this, because since it's so old, we're going to talk a little bit about WrestleMania, then we'll get into the post-mania stuff. But I've seen some people on podcasts say, like, oh, if you really want to show the company that you don't like Roman, like, don't respond to him at all. Just turn your back, or everybody go to concession stands. But WWE fans do not have half the willpower that requires. You're not going to see any significant percentage of people turn around or anything like that. The only thing you'll do to get them to divert their attention is bring a beach ball into the arena.
Beach ball mania. How was your week?
It was all right. I spent more of it than I would like to, arguing with people about aspects of wrestling, which is like, I don't care about this, this company or this sport enough to be arguing this much, but it took up a little bit of my time, which I'll get into. Otherwise,
how much of your time did you take? Do you have enough time to do other things during the week?
I was able to multitask. I saw a movie this week that I'll talk about, and I did my normal work. But you know, sometimes half of that attention was spent defending an argument that I've made online. But real briefly, any takeaways from WrestleMania? Anything happened that you didn't expect or anything like that?
It had been pretty much been reported that like the Hardy Boys were going to come back.
Yeah. Probably I did not expect them to win. That was, I don't think was necessary.
Who did you expect to win? You don't bring like a hot tag team like that and have them lose to like, you know, Enzo and Cass or.
I understand bringing them back and wanting them to win in their debut, but this is a ladder match where you could excuse something like that, because people don't really always count that as a loss. Like, okay, they beat the Hardy Boys and Cesaro and Sheamus and the Club. You don't. They didn't all get pinned.
The amount of the reaction that the crowd that they got from the crowd. I mean, there was no way anyone else was going to lose.
I mean, to them. You can say the same thing about like when AJ debuted at the Royal Rumble. He technically lost that match, but they still got the pop off of him.
But wasn't as loud as the Hardy Boys.
Well, yeah, you got the nostalgia thing as well as some of the people who have been following them with all the delete chants.
It was definitely the biggest moment of the night.
Yeah, but it's still weird to think about the fact that, okay, it was for a long while, it seemed like it was a foregone conclusion that Enzo and Cass were going to go into Mania and finally win the title a year after they debuted. Not only did they get shown up by a returning nostalgia act, they got beat in that match that they were supposed to win. Then they have a number one contenders match on the Raw immediately following that, and they lose. So they're going down a path which makes me think maybe the story of Enzo and Cass is that they will never win a championship. Seems to
be. That's nice, because they're kind of a little stale at this point.
They are, but the story that they've been working with them presumably is that they've been going this long without winning a title, so they allowed them to get stale along their timeline. So they're being punished for their own bad writing.
I'm trying to think like what else happened. I just thought it was pretty much a lackluster show overall. And, you know, I think I mentioned I canceled my WWE Network subscription.
Okay. I mean, the thing, a lot of people usually after they get that free period or whatever are canceling now, because a lot of people got WrestleMania free. So this is the big purge of those people.
It was nothing to warrant keeping it.
Yeah, I'm thinking there was
The stupid the WWE Championship match between Bray Wyatt and Orton.
Yeah, with the maggots and roaches.
Yeah, whatever that was. Like, a very quick match.
Yeah, and nobody cared, as I figured would happen.
Each of the women's championship matches were just messes.
Yeah, that's the problem, is that you want to give them
women into.
Yeah, you give them a spotlight throughout the year, and you have great matches, these singles matches throughout the year. But then you throw them all together. Yeah, it's like either they're all going to be in there together, or they're going to get booted from the show. So I guess this is what the compromise we have to make for the women's revolution, because, you know, Triple H loves the women, although they can't get a real spotlight on the show. They have to be in the cool down match after Goldberg. That was one match that I did. It gave me more than I was expecting. I was pleasantly surprised by that match.
I mean, everybody knew it was going to happen, but it was still sort of cool to see it all.
Yeah, because people, a lot of people were predicting, like, based on the trajectory of how Goldberg's return has been, like, oh, it doesn't seem like he can take bumps, so it's just going to be a quick squash.
Evidently he can.
Yeah, he took 10 suplexes. He gave a couple spears, speared through the barricade, got F5'd, I think, twice. So that match, I enjoyed it.
And now we got a part-time
champion.
Universal champion. Yeah. Hey.
Yeah, it was like, it was kind of the reason why having two belts was necessary, because you had only had a champion on one show. Now we are back to that, and you kind of were we going to add a third belt so this just can be the Brock belt that he can keep at home while he's gone? Who knows?
Undertaker's retired. Apparently.
Yeah.
I hope.
So, one of the things I this wasn't really an argument online, but one of the things I was talking with people on in this wrestling Facebook group about was like, because this guy came up to me at work who was very distraught about the Undertaker's retirement. It's just like, I can't believe it, man. It's over. I'm just like, I don't get it. I've never really been an Undertaker guy, and it's
not like he's been wrestling at a high level for the past.
Yeah, it's like it's been time,
7-8 years.
Like it should have been over with the Brock Lesnar loss. Whether or not you think it was the right person to beat him, so like it was time. That match was getting sloppy, and he's been
he got off his game during the match.
Yeah.
During that Lesnar match, and couldn't, you know, he had to be carried through the end of it.
Yeah.
He's going to have another hip surgery apparently coming up.
Yeah. So it's like, it's time. It's been time. So it wasn't a big deal to me. And plus this guy, I mean, it was a little bit over the top with this one specific guy I'm talking about, because he was like, yeah, those are my top two. It was like Shawn and Taker. I'm like, what?
Jesus.
Like, I understand Shawn Michaels, because he, like, depending on who you ask, he's one of the best wrestlers ever to get in the ring. But, like,
hugely Taker's influential.
Yeah. Taker's never been, like, the guy I would look at, like, that's a great wrestler. Like, his character has been interesting at times, and for most of his career.
It's a gimmick from old timey. It's definitely a gimmick from.
Yeah, it's nostalgia thing. It's like saying Hogan was the best. Like, no, he wasn't. He was interesting. He has that flair of that era.
Transcended into the mainstream.
Yeah.
Made wrestling popular.
Yeah, but like, as far as wrestling is concerned, like, he was never.
Are you saying his leg drop finisher wasn't devastating?
His leg drop finisher that he couldn't even do in later years, where his 90% of his offense is punching, and then there's the occasional forehead bite that he would perform even as a babyface, which doesn't make sense. But yeah, that was one of the things I had disputes with people online about. I was like, hey, get over it. He's an old man and he's leaving. Half the people complain about part-timers showing up, and then other people complain about Undertaker when he finally does decide to leave his gloves and hat in the ring. So I won't miss him. It'll free up a spot for, hopefully it'll free up a spot for another younger talent to have on the card, this 6-hour card that the show was.
Yeah. And obviously the best part of the show was Brie and John Cena, or Nikki and John Cena.
Yeah. The proposal engaged, that everybody knew was happening. And
I changed.
Nikki didn't seem shocked at all.
I turned away when, stupid. As soon as the match ended, he had the mic in his hand, he started talking. I'm like, okay,
I
know where this is going. I don't care.
The funny thing is that he did nothing to really convince people otherwise, like, based on what The Miz.
That he's a robot. He does everything for the camera.
Nikki, I love you. It's like, yeah, I couldn't stop thinking about that throughout his whole speech. It was like, this is very Robo Cena like. It doesn't really counter that image at all.
And it's just such a terrible match for such a great sort of build up to it, with the whole total bullshit thing. That
I mean, well, that was basically The Miz making chicken salad out of chicken shit. Because the whole angle to begin with, they knew this was the finish line, and The Miz just did
total divas.
Yeah, it's just
plot.
Yeah, it's basically the next season of Total Divas. This is just going to be the storyline, is leading into this match.
The whole WWE company, it's all just entertainment. It's not. It's less on professional wrestling and good matches. It's all just,
Yeah, it should be capital W, lowercase W, capital E. That's really what they're focused on now.
And they got such mainstream pub from this. Oh, that's
Look at all the coverage they got about Gronk from ESPN, who they have a contractual agreement to be covered by them anyway.
With that shithead Coachman,
yeah. So enough about WrestleMania. The most controversial things that I got into arguments about online was the post-Mania situation, and my stance that a lot of people disagree with me about.
Crowd hijacking the show.
Yeah, I hate the post-WrestleMania crowd. I think they're one of the worst things that has happened to wrestling in recent years. What is your stance on the Raw after Mania and slightly SmackDown after Mania crowd?
I mean, it was cool to see Roman Reigns, get booed like that, and go fuck Roman Reigns thing. But it's like that it happened throughout the entire show.
Yeah,
they're picking and choosing which matches to hate, and the whole like beach ball stuff. And
that was my biggest issue, was the beach ball mania thing with the during the Cruiserweight match. And I've heard all of the arguments from people.
A perfectly good match.
Yeah, by the way. I've heard all the arguments from people being like, oh, we. taught us to not care about the cruiserweight matches. They're boring. And then it was like, they gave you everything that you could want from a cruiserweight match. They did a springboard Spanish fly, basically damn near killing themselves in the middle of the ring while everybody's head is turned slightly to the right, watching like beach balls bouncing around in the ring. So that irritated me the most out of everything that the post-Mania crowd did, because like the positive of the Raw after Mania crowd is that they're the most excited and they're the loudest and
they're the hardcore wrestling fans that they paid to go down there to watch WrestleMania. So they're obviously going to, you know, be there for the Raw tapings.
Yeah. But then like the downside to me is that when they shit on matches, and I didn't mind it as much when it was like, a couple years in a row where they would do like a Sheamus versus Randy Orton match and everybody would just chant for all the commentators and different stuff because they were bored. But I think they literally booked this cruiserweight match with all these spots specifically for this crowd. Like, okay, this is something they're going to pay attention to. And they didn't. So, that irritated me. Also a little bit on SmackDown, they tried to do that again during, Naomi's title defense. There was another attempt at Beach Ball Mania during that, and like the same thing,
they confiscated. And
yeah, that's what I saw some people in this Facebook group that were at WrestleMania. It was like, well, I popped a couple of them, and I was just like, thank you, you're doing the Lord's work. Because like I like a hot crowd, but I don't like crowds that chant for themselves and they're like, we are awesome. Like any crowd that chants that is clearly not awesome.
We got a couple of NXT call-ups and debuts of Ty Dillinger on SmackDown
and Nakamura.
Nakamura on SmackDown, and we have the Revival on Raw.
I'm trying to think. Was there a second one on Raw? Was it just the Revival? I think they were the only ones, were they?
Yeah, they were the only ones.
So, like, all the debuts were interesting to me. Like, I have...
Emma, I guess, if you want to call it a debut.
I mean, I think I would consider her to have been on the Raw roster for, like, a year now, or however long it's been, just not on screen. But, so I don't know much about the Revival. I've seen a couple matches with them, but like,
yeah, I've heard good things. I haven't actually seen much of them.
It seems like they're good in the ring. I don't know much about their characters or anything like that. Ty Dillinger seems like kind of a,
that was fun to watch him just squash
Curt Hawkins. That's just his role now. Yeah. That's the thing for me. It seems like
got some star material
potentially, but to me it seems like almost like a TNA version of Daniel Bryan. It's just like he has a chant that is extremely over, but I don't know what else about him is appealing to the fans. I think the chant is the biggest part of it. Like people like yelling out 10 and
it's fun.
Yeah. Apparently
that's half the battle right there.
Apparently he's been signed in extremely long time because how it was put on one podcast, they said when Ty Dillinger was signed to a developmental contract, the number one song in the country was Grills by Nelly. It's like, Jesus Christ, how long this has to be, like nearly 10 years there. So this is finally him getting the call up that I guess a lot of people have been waiting for. So it's cool.
With the whole Superstar Shakedown being announced by Vince on Raw.
Shake up,
and you know Kurt Angle being the new GM on Raw. You think him and Daniel Bryan on SmackDown are going to make some deals?
That seems like what it's going to be. It's not going to be like a full blown draft. It's just going to be like individual trades, I guess. But it's still weird to me to have like the new, like the NXT call ups the night after Mania, and then you do the shake up. Although you're obviously not going to switch any of those people, but yeah. But I'm assuming like maybe there's going to be even more call ups since this shake up is going on, but who knows? another thing I wanted to talk about was the Nakamura debut. It was interesting that when he came out, like after the whole Miz thing, it seemed like he was going to have a confrontation with the Miz, but he just left.
I thought they were
going to
wrestle.
Yeah, the Miz just disappears. And then Nakamura, like, he comes out and does his whole entrance, and then he just leaves again. It's like, okay, that was kind of weird, but at least people get to see the entrance on the main roster. I think this is only the second time I've seen his entrance, too, with the whole violin and everything. So that was interesting. Some people... I've seen online some people don't get him because I guess they haven't seen him on NXT, but from what I've seen, he's an interesting character, so I feel like he could be somebody they could put as one of their top baby faces. I don't know if he'll be placed at the top, which is what the rumor is, that he's like, people are looking at him as like the John Cena replacement, which I don't really see happening, but I
guess we'll see. Is
I don't think you should like specifically bookmark someone to be that. You should just let it happen. Like, they didn't say that Dean
who's
Ambrose
the other baby
was
face. Yeah, who's the other baby face on the SmackDown roster?
I mean, they have, I think AJ now is made the turn after the handshake with Shane, but I feel like you shouldn't like pinpoint somebody, because that's the biggest problem with Roman, is that they say he's going to be the guy instead of just letting a guy have storylines, and if people react really loud to his storylines versus other people, then they put him in a more prominent position. It's not organic.
Looking at things from sort of like a live, you know, sort of a business standpoint with the live shows, I mean, who's going to,
I mean,
you know, they're going to need a reason to draw, you know, people to come to those live shows.
I mean, from what I've heard, I think Shinsuke has been the number three highest, like, draw for live attendance.
Yeah.
For tickets. So I can see that being the reason why they would put him towards the top, but I still feel like I don't want it to be obvious. Like, Dean Ambrose was the star on SmackDown at the beginning of the brand split, but it didn't seem like they were like, this is the guy, and they were like focusing so hard on that. So hopefully this feels more natural, but I guess we'll see.
There have been some like rumors and stuff of who's gonna go where. I've heard like New Day maybe going to SmackDown, Charlotte maybe going to SmackDown, Alexa Bliss maybe going to Raw.
Yeah, they definitely need to add it. Like, I've heard the Alexa Bliss and Charlotte trade potentially. They need extra women on top of that on Raw, because they've always been kind of short between the two women's divisions.
The same three or four wrestling each other.
Yeah. So they need like one or two extra women on top of just trading somebody. And the New Day does need like new feuds to revive them a little bit, to give them some extra time with their gimmick. This might be a little wrestling heavy for some people who don't subscribe for wrestling talk. So is
then
there anything
stop
else?
Talking about wrestling and go yeah. somewhere else.
Yeah. So did you see any movies this week?
Nothing in the theater. That was really like nothing to really get me going out there. I know that you saw the Power Rangers movie.
Yeah, I finally got out to see it.
For a couple of weeks. I didn't see it simply because, I mean, the reviews were kind of lackluster, and it just looked like the dark, gritty version of Power Rangers. That didn't really excite me to go to the theater to go see it. And did you like it?
It's an interesting movie. I'm still trying to figure out how I feel about it, because, like, I'll say as the movie started, and we get like our character introductions, like I was like locked in, and I felt like they were introducing the characters really well at the beginning. Like, you really get a good picture of
heard.
Who, yeah, you
I've
really
heard.
Get a good picture of who Jason
I've
is.
Heard. Once they become the actual Power Rangers with the suits and the Zords, that's when it becomes kind of stupid.
I mean, but
not
that,
as interesting.
But spoilers, that part is actually like probably only the last like 20 minutes of the movie.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
They spend a lot of time getting into their characters, and they weren't able to morph. And I guess the secret is they have to be bonded to get together mentally so they could morph as a team. But like I said, at the beginning, we get a good picture of who Jason and Billy are. And then, like, you find about their bond. And Billy, in this version, is black. So he's the black kid. Is not Zach, the Black Ranger, which ruined my childhood, personally. Because I used to identify with Zach, being a black Zach myself. But Billy is the black one in this story, and he is on the autism spectrum.
Yeah. Yeah, autism, yeah.
Yeah, so it kind of, I like how they play it as like a character trait, but not like his full character. It's not like a focus. He just kind of has this quirk about him, but he is still obviously the smartest of the Rangers. So I like how that kind of doesn't hold him back at all. He's just kind of like obsessive about certain things. So that was interesting. It's like seeing their bond. And then you see a little bit about Kimberly. And it's funny, now that I think about it, the way they introduced those three is kind of like a Breakfast Club situation. Because
that's what some of the
Like, I haven't heard that comparison, but now I think about it. Yeah, they meet up in detention because Jason is basically the screw up. He's an aspiring sports star, but he has like a DUI at the beginning.
Gets arrested,
wrecks this car.
And the ankle monitor or whatever.
Yeah.
I've read.
So we meet them in that whole Breakfast Club type setting. But the people I feel like who got underserved were actually Zach, this version of Zach, who's the Asian character, and Trini, who, like, you don't even learn her name until like halfway through the movie. Like, it's just, it was a convoluted way they got them all to like find the power coins. It was like, okay, Billy was basically looking for them anyway. He kind of, it seemed like he was narrowing down on like some stuff he was looking for in this quarry. And he's like an explorer and he's doing this weird stuff. And he got Jason to help him out with it. And then like, randomly just Kimberly is like skinny dipping nearby, and Trini is like off in this close area that like overlooks thing, just like doing karate poses, and Zach is off he's not too far away, he's just stalking Trini. So it's basically the reason they are all in that same area. So it was like kind of slapped together way of how they got together.
Yeah. What did you think about Elizabeth
Banks
as Rita?
actually, for the most part, I would say she was a highlight of the movie. Like, it was just, her scenes were funny. Like, some people describe them as like a horror movie, and I guess I could see that. She was kind of reminding me of like a Green Goblin mixed with Freddy Krueger type of character. And
yeah, I like the look of the character.
Yeah, and I think she did her role well.
And the old backstory of her being like a former
Ranger. Was the Green Ranger, while Zordon was the Red Ranger in their previous life, basically. It's just very lucky that the same night that the Rangers found these power coins, like in a unrelated story, a fishing boat accidentally dug up Rita's corpse and she reanimated. It's just lucky that happened on the same night. But you know, coincidences.
So overall, would you recommend it?
I would say,
are you excited about the sequel that was teased?
I think
at the end,
I would say, overall, my opinion on this first movie is mixed, but it definitely makes me interested in what they will do in the sequel, because you don't even see much of them like fighting hand to hand. Like, they morph, and then Rita creates Goldar, who they can't handle as just like Rangers on the ground, so they immediately get into their Zords. So like, to see more like different things they can do as individual Rangers would be interesting. And like, the tone that they set, it looks much darker, like in looking at it on the screen and in like how it's advertised, but I feel like they made it work, and they, like, everybody in the group kind of has their own specific character and their own sense of humor. So, like, overall, the tone, I feel like it worked. It just, the story was kind of just, like, surface, like a Power Rangers movie. You would expect that type of,
did
like,
you,
surface
did
story.
Did you get enough of the theme song? Did they even, like, use the theme song?
It was, like, a very short little thing of, like, I think there was some point after they got into the Zords, you hear a little bit of it, and then it kind of gets cut. But it was interesting. But the one thing that I'll say, a lot of people had a problem with it, and I noticed it. I for sure noticed it throughout the movie, but it wasn't a huge problem with me because I know, like, Power Rangers basically was a 30-minute toy commercial. But
it was cheesy.
Yeah. But this movie was a nearly 2-hour Krispy Kreme commercial. And that was a little bit jarring.
Okay, so what I've heard about this, like, what role does Krispy Kreme? Is it just like a place that they hang out and eat, or
no?
Does
it's it have kind of
a bigger plot.
It's kind of the Krispy Kreme is kind of the MacGuffin of the entire movie. Like, you know how in Guardians of the Galaxy, the orb, like, everybody's after the orb. Like, Krispy Kreme is the location of the Krispy Kreme in Angel Grove is basically sitting on top of, like, where this, like, precious stone is or whatever. It's like something related to the power coins or whatever. And it's like, you'll destroy the earth basically if you get this stone out. And the Krispy Kreme is right on top of that area. So, like that fact alone.
Clever product placement.
Yeah, that fact alone wouldn't be a big deal. It's just like, oh, we have to get to this area and it just happens to be a Krispy Kreme. But they keep mentioning it by name. Like, as Rita is like, has Goldar destroying the town. Like, we are almost at the Krispy Kreme. We're going to get to the Krispy Kreme. It's like, really?
Jesus. I would be so embarrassed to say any lines like that.
Yeah. And then, like, in the middle of, like, this fight with the Zords destroying the town, basically, it was like a Man of Steel fight. Like, they basically screwed up everything in the town and destroyed all the buildings. But throughout all of this, you see a slow motion shot of, like, Elizabeth Banks as Rita inside the Krispy Kreme eating a donut. It's just like, really?
Shameless.
Did you have to? Like, that was like one extra
Somebody's
step
gotta
too
pay
far.
For this movie.
Yeah, obviously. And they said, like, I've seen in online that, like, yeah, they partnered with Saban or whoever the company that owns the Power Rangers. Like, they partnered to make this movie. So they must have invested a lot in this movie because there's even, like, special Power Rangers Krispy Kreme donuts. So yeah, that was a little bit annoying. So hopefully there's less of that in the sequel. Maybe Dunkin' Donuts will one up them, and then their power coins are all gonna be like donut holes, and they just eat them to morph. Who knows?
I have a question. Have you caught any of this new Netflix show called 13 Reasons Why? I've heard good things about it, but I don't feel compelled to watch it myself.
Yeah, the weird thing about it is, like, so the background is, like, it's kind of inspired by a girl's suicide note. Is that what the deal is? Like,
something to do with it's like a teenage coming-of-age drama, and, like, somebody committed suicide. And
yeah, that doesn't really, like, scream out to me, like, you should watch this. Especially, like, I don't know, for people who have dealt with depression or anything like that, it's not like the type of thing they're probably going to want to run out and see. And it's kind of a similar situation. It's like, this seems a little bit dark, so I don't know. There's more stuff out there that is calling out to me sooner than that. Like, as dark as you want to say, like the Marvel Netflix shows are, it's like, well, I don't think we've really run into the issue of suicide yet. At least as far as I am in Iron Fist, we haven't had a suicide committed yet. So that's going to be on the back burner on my list if I do get to it.
I don't think I'll check it out.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah. But if you are looking for some entertainment out there, maybe instead of instead of watching a show about suicide, you should listen to a podcast by former presidential candidate Bernie Sanders, because apparently he has
a podcast.
Yeah, yeah, apparently everybody's getting into the podcasting game, including Bernie Sanders. And it sounds like Bill Nye was one of his first guests on his podcast. And I guess, I would assume they're basically...
Hear the Burn.
Yeah, Hear the Burn. Hey, burn victims, this podcast is especially for you. Yeah, so Bill Nye was one of his first guests, so I could assume that they just talked about how dumb our president is for ignoring basic scientific facts, specifically global warming or climate change, whatever you want to call it. So on a tweet about the podcast, it says, "The revolution will be podcast." So I like that pun there.
Have you had any Pepsi lately, Zach?
I have not. Actually, this whole...
have you handed any to a police officer?
No.
During any traffic stops?
I'm not a young white model, so I don't think it would work as well if I did it. But like this whole thing with the Kendall Jenner Pepsi commercial is so stupid. Like this is the reason why focus groups exist. Like, what did nobody see this and think maybe you should not even address like Black Lives Matter is a sensitive thing, and also if you did do that, you should probably not make a white woman like the face of your version of the resistance. Just all around bad idea.
It's so unrelatable in terms of like communicating with like the consumer, and like it just feels so manipulative, the whole message of like using like the whole like protesting like movement with the you know, Black people being killed by the police, and then sort of using that as like the basis for like a fucking, Pepsi commercial.
Yeah.
And
that's the problem, is like, it hurts me so much because it's like, of the cola wars, I've always chosen Pepsi. And this is like, oh, I don't,
ew.
I wish Coca-Cola was the one responsible
for this. Right there anyway.
I wish Coca-Cola was responsible for this. I don't like Coke.
I'm glad Pepsi was responsible for this.
Like on a non-political note, I prefer Pepsi because I feel like Coke is too sweet.
Sugary Pepsi. I feel Pepsi is too sweet.
It's weird. Like some people don't know the difference. Some people prefer one over the other. But for me, like, I like the sharp tartness of Pepsi, and I feel like
I don't want to say vanilla taste.
It's kind of Coke. Yeah. That's the thing. That's what leans me away from it. Cause like, I almost feel like if you had a Pepsi at its freshest, it's nice and tart. And like, if you let it sit out for like 2 hours, then it'll taste like Coke tastes to me. Like, it's more of it doesn't have the bite to it, and it's a little bit too sweet for my taste. But, you know, everybody has their preferences.
Cops love it.
Apparently. I mean, it's the blue and whites. It's got their whole aesthetic is on the can. So that's probably, how the cop changed his mind about killing Black people. Is just like, oh, you white woman like the same soda that I like, so I guess I won't kill any of these Black people behind you. When I go home, I may shoot a couple Black people on the way there, but they didn't have Pepsi, so you know.
Did you see like the video of like it was some kid or so some guy was like, I think it was like in Seattle or something. He was like in front of some judge or something. I think he was in court for some minor offense. Like he tried to hand like the mayor. Oh yeah, I think it was like some town hall.
Yeah, it was like council meeting. Yeah. And it was a very stupid way to do it, because he was like,
but why?
He's just like, I got something for you, and he reaches into his jacket.
Or something would try to pounce on this guy and like pull guns on him like he was gonna kill the mayor of like whatever city that was.
He seemed really jerky about it. He's like, I got something for you, and he reaches into his jacket. So
yeah, exactly.
In all likelihood, it would have been.
That's how you stop conflicts. You just hand someone a Pepsi.
Yeah, maybe you should like hold it up. Like, you know, police are very jumpy, so you should keep your hands visible at all times. So you should pull the Pepsi out before you are in their sight and say, hello, I have a Pepsi for you.
They didn't look jumpy in that commercial.
Yeah, I mean, they were standing at attention like the centurions that they are, the stalwart guardians of our democracy, our proud police force. But that, you know, it was just a bad mistake. It was a mistake all around, and it was shown that, like, even having one other person's insight might have prevented this in a skit from SNL last night, because they kind of do their take on, like, they show the director basically setting up the shot, and they have all the people ready to shoot the commercial, and then he gets a call from, I think it's supposed to be his sister or whatever, and he's just like, he describes the commercial to them, and they're like, no, you should not do that. He's just like, okay, put somebody else on the phone. Let me get their opinion on it. Like, basically everybody tells him, like, you shouldn't even touch that. So
it was, I thought you were going to talk about the, I think it was like Amber Ruffin from Late Night with Seth Meyers. They did like a little parody of it.
Okay, I didn't see that one yet.
Where she gives like a can to a police officer, like initially, you know, he's happy, and then he, and then that scowl comes back on his face, and like he, like it, like it's implied that he's about to, like, you know, arrest her.
Okay. You know? I mean, yeah, it's clearly the wrong message that they were sending. Like, sure, Pepsi supports the resistance. I get that idea, but this is a case.
I thought it was less that Pepsi supports the resistance and more, you know, everything is like, it's like consumerism. You know, regardless of what the situation is, you know, buy Pepsi.
I mean, that's
everything is cool.
I mean, that's the between the lines of it all. But I think their aim was to say, like, hey, people out there. No, because it was like a generic protest. It was like, okay, this isn't Black Lives Matter, because there's like black people breakdancing, and there's an Asian guy with a cello on his back, and it's like, we don't know what this protest is.
I mean, like, in terms of Pepsi, like, they weren't supporting the police, they weren't supporting the protesters. It was just, everybody loves Pepsi.
They were endorsing peace as a general concept, peace. So I think their idea was like, okay, whatever you're fighting for, we're with you. Pepsi can be your fuel for change, but it comes off as what it actually is. Just like, hey, we're going to get your attention by using this general idea that, you know, is popular in the news, and subliminally push Pepsi down your throat. Except for the fact that this will be one of the cases where, you know, people sometimes criticize commercials where you don't know what the product is, and it's just like some generic story. Like, this is where they could have used that, and just like, you shouldn't see Pepsi anywhere in the shot, and then it's just like, Pepsi supports you at the end.
It just felt it felt like this capitalism and like respecting like authority, like the police.
Yeah, the message of it was completely lost with whatever they were trying. So yeah, that was not a good look for them. A little bit about SNL besides the Pepsi thing. I haven't seen any like feedback on this online or anything, but Louis C.K., his monologue was interesting.
Yeah, I was gonna say, who was the host? I didn't even know.
Yeah, it was Louis C.K. It was Louis C.K., and the interesting thing was, like, when it started up and we saw that Louis C.K. was going to be the host, my wife is not the biggest fan of Louis C.K. because she feels like his jokes are racist. And it's like, I kind of wanted to dispute her, but then she was like, I don't want to start off with any of this weird off-color jokes, like being shocked about seeing three black people own a pizza shop. It's like, it's just unnecessary. And then it was like, he literally starts his first joke is like, why does a chicken cross the street? Cause a black guy was behind it. And then like, he tells the longer joke about like why this is not racist, but it's like, I kind of am leaning towards, my wife's
like,
opinion.
What? Yeah. Wait, I don't even, what? Could
it was like, the joke, like, it's hard to even explain. You have to hear it. And then it still doesn't even really work in my opinion, but it's like, for a while I've been like, okay, Louis C.K. is a racist. He just says certain things in his jokes and is like trying to make a point to the contrary. But then it's like, when you can kind of predict the type of thing he's going to say, the beginning is like, maybe I'm less on your side, because like,
why was it not racist? What was his explanation?
It was a very bad explanation. So I'm not even going to try to repeat it. It's just like, you have to see the joke, and it still doesn't necessarily work, even with like the like backpedaling that is written into the joke. Like, I get where he's going with this. It's kind of like one of those type of Michael Scott slash David Brent office jokes. Is like the joke is that the person delivering it is the fool. It's kind of like, it's a weird type of humor that a lot of people wouldn't get, but it's still, I don't know if it's coming from the best place. Like, if you can pinpoint without even seeing the performance, like, okay, this is the type of thing that I don't like, and he starts off with that immediately. So I'm kind of like, okay, I see where some people are coming from who have an issue with Louis C.K. And then there were like hints of that type of thing throughout. Like, you could say, I mean, depending on how sensitive you are, you could see like allusions to homophobia. And then there's like kind of this joke that's a pseudo racist Italian rant. So like,
this was in his monologue, all of this stuff.
No, some of this stuff was like throughout the show. Like, there's one joke where this one sketch where he's an attorney and he's defending this client. Well, I think he's on the prosecution, and he, like, everybody is entranced by his extremely long eyelashes. And that's just like a weird, joke. And then there's, he's another sketch where he's an old man who hires a birthday clown for his own birthday, and nobody else is showing up. It's just like a weird, like, it's some weird stuff in this episode of SNL. It's clear that a lot of it probably came more directly from Louis C.K.'s mind versus the SNL staff. And maybe this will give people a little more of an appreciation of the dumb kind of generic stuff that they come up with every now and
then. I can't believe I missed this funny episode. Is The Rock hosting next week, or is he hosting the week after?
I'm not sure. I haven't seen, but I didn't know he was coming up at all. So I'll be excited when The Rock does come back. So,
I think they announced like the final three.
Okay.
I think it was like an actress who, I forgot the name, that's going to be hosting one of the last two, and then like The Rock is going to be hosting.
Okay. Well, I'll be ready for that, because this one was kind of a weird watch. It's like, because I was ready to laugh, but it was like so many weird things where it's like, I don't know if I want to laugh at this.
See, I'm not a huge Louis C.K. fan either.
Like, I like his show, and I've liked some of his stand-up, but
the whole automatic Louis C.K., Amy Schumer, you know, we have to love these people.
No, it's funny is because we, like, I have the similar opinion about Amy Schumer. Like, it was more immediate with Amy Schumer. It's just like, nah, this chick's racist. I'm turning this off. It's just like, Louis C.K. is like, his part of his shtick is that he's not, and this is like his take on what racism is about. It's just like, nah. Yeah, like, I miss people who actually examine the world and like from an observer's perspective and let you see it from that perspective, instead of being like, I'm going to distract you with all my personal shit and make you forget about my observations that I'm making. Like, George Carlin was almost like the voice of God, being like, hey, look at this. Isn't this funny?
It was so awesome to not hear him talk about like his kids or raising his kids.
Yeah.
Or, like, women and like all this other shit. It was so great, just his observations on just history and like the world and like,
yeah, it was like literally an observer. It's just like, you're not distracted by whatever he has in his like personal prejudices or anything like that. It's just like, look at this
graphic dates you've been on with these women, or like changing diapers and like how you can't get laid,
yeah,
you know, all those shit.
Yeah, so yeah, so that's why like I'm kind of off board. Like, I think his show is pretty decent, and he has an interesting slant on that. And I think that's because of like some of the other cast on there, and that it's like more autobiographical. It's like, you don't have to focus on opinions on things is just necessarily, it's a different situation. But, you know, that was, our host for last night's SNL. So, and you'll see the clips coming up. It was the Chainsmokers. And oddly enough, it was the Chainsmokers without one of their, featured guests who on most songs are the ones who do all the singing. It was just, I guess, two of those songs that they performed were just songs where they actually performed and did all the music for. So, just like you would expect with those are the weaker songs on the album, obviously, because the guy who sings in the Chainsmokers is not very good. So, there you go.
Are you excited for the return of Doctor Who this Saturday?
Actually, I have not been very excited for Doctor Who since Peter Capaldi took over.
I still haven't seen the Christmas special.
I'm probably behind by like 10 episodes. I don't know. Because like I've seen maybe two or three episodes since he has been the Doctor. I've seen the ones up until we run into Arya from Game of Thrones. The second time we see her, I think it was the last episode that I had seen. So, like, I was interested when I saw the trailer for the Christmas special, the fact that there's, like, a superhero guy played by a guy from Shameless. Like, I was interested in that, but, like, I feel like I have to catch up because I don't want to
I feel like I'm ready loop, for Stephen Moffat to be gone.
Yeah, they need some kind of shakeup. I don't know, like, I don't want to blame it on Peter Capaldi, but, the stories I'll have blame been. It on Moffat. Yeah, I would say since who was the previous
season
Doctor?
Season 2 of Matt Smith.
Yeah, since Matt Smith's season, it's like the That's thing.
Second
I,
season.
Yeah, the thing I loved about David Tennant's Doctor, and even beforehand with Christopher Eccleston or whatever his name was, I like how everything was connected. You would see characters come back and everything, and it was like when Matt Smith became the Doctor, like everything was just like severed, and like there was no, he had no past almost. It was like you didn't hear any reference of Rose. I don't think you ever saw Martha Jones again. It's just like all the stuff that was like the history built up. It's just like they kind of threw that stuff out. And then occasionally you will see like the creatures, his main enemies created. Come back over and over again. But
the
then,
weeping angels and like the, yeah. some of the other ones that he had a hand in making.
Yeah. So you would see those, but then it seemed like the standalone episodes, you know, where they would just run down corridors for an hour, like those got really repetitive and like,
and the Doctor can't die. Don't forget that.
Yeah. Like he can't die. He regenerates.
These convoluted fucking ways that he escapes death.
Yeah, he always escapes death, but even when he does actually die or whatever, he regenerates. So it's just like, why can't you, how about you just have a season where it's like, he doesn't avoid death. He just keeps regenerating. He's just have like a cast of 20 doctors for one season. It's like, that would be a more realistic scenario if like.
And none of them will be a woman.
Yeah, exactly.
According to Stephen Moffat.
Is that actually his edict about it, that they will not pick a woman?
He says something about, like, he compared it to, like, making Queen Elizabeth a man or some shit, some quote.
It doesn't make sense.
He's not as strong on the whole female doctor thing.
Like, they literally had the Master, who was the Doctor's biggest enemy, regenerate into a woman as the Missy. So it doesn't make sense.
You were just talking about none of the actors from the Tennant era coming back. Apparently, John Simons, who played the Master.
Okay.
During the Tenet era, he's going to be on this upcoming season.
So how does that work? Because I think Missy's still alive. So does she degenerate back into a previous form?
They're supposed to be on screen at the same time, so I don't know what the...
Okay, so timey, wiggly, wobbly, timey-wimey stuff.
Knows?
Okay. All right.
You excited for Bill, the new female lesbian companion?
Sure. I mean, they made a big deal about it, but it's like... Like I said on Facebook, he is like Captain Jack Harkness. He was like omnisexual. He's like, he got down with aliens, men, women. He was always hitting on the doctor and his companion. Like, that's the one person, if you want to bring back somebody, I would like to see Captain Jack come back, because I don't think he's returning to Arrow anytime soon. I don't know what else he's doing, but I would love to see Captain Jack. Like, I love Torchwood, even like the spinoff of Doctor Who. So, like, I would like to see more stuff like that. But, you know,
did you like even the Torchwood that was on Stars?
That one was weird. Like, the weird thing about, like,
Miracle Day.
Yeah, Miracle Day and, like, the Children of Earth one. Those two seasons were just, like, a weird experiment. It was, like for most of Torchwood, like, before that, it was an episodic thing. Like, they would deal with a different thing every
week. Yeah, each episode.
Then it's just, like, you do these long runs. There's, like, this one long, basically, continuing story. It was a weird way to do it. But I feel like the one with Mekhi Phifer, it was interesting, and like it was still weird that they weren't getting off of the story as soon as I thought they should have, but I was still ready for the next season of it, and then it just didn't happen. So, you know, things happen. Anyway, was there anything else you wanted to hit on, anything big from this week before we wrapped up in this abridged episode of the Frustrated Grad Podcast?
I'm trying to think about, like, there weren't any, like, big movie trailers or any tidbits for any upcoming movies that I really remember.
Yeah, and I'm seriously avoiding, like, any more Marvel and DC. Like, even DC, I don't care about Justice League, really, but I don't want to see any material for it, because it's, like, they
you're
just consistently
too afraid to see
spoiled.
Shitty, so. You want to see the shit. You want to be surprised by the shit.
I don't want to have preconceived notions. Like, that was one of the great things about watching a movie you don't have knowledge of.
Batman v Superman in Man of Steel.
Of course, but like
this
like,
one's gonna be different.
Like, I saw Man of Steel, but I also would not have wanted to know that Batman and Superman team up before I even see the movie where they're supposed to face each other. So I don't want to know any specifics about these movies. Like, even on the other side of things, like, I don't think Spider-Man Homecoming is going to be bad, but they keep showing me stuff and I don't want to see it. So, like, that's why I'm avoiding, like, anything I'm super interested in. I'm backing off. And even stuff I'm not interested in. So, with that, I don't think there's anything else major. MTV is trying to revamp their awards show, and the gist of
TV
it is
TV and movies.
Yes, no. Because, like, hey, we don't care about your opinions on movies.
Fuck cares about MTV?
And isn't it a conflict of interest that you're giving out awards to TV? I would be surprised if MTV didn't win a majority of these awards, but I'll just hope that they have more integrity than that.
And the acting awards is going to be like, they're going to combine the men and the women. So just performers.
Progressive. So progressive.
Like, why the fuck are they? Just end this, end the video music awards.
Yeah. It's like, you don't play videos. You give away awards for videos that people saw on YouTube. And now you're giving away TV awards to shows that aren't on your network. Like, what is the need for you to be doing this? Like, it's the MTV Not Us Awards. That's what they should just call it and put them all together. But anyway. All right. With that, I think we can wrap for the week. Yeah. All right. So for the rest of this week, where can people contact you to let them you know their frustrations of life and maybe some they have with us in particular?
My Twitter is at Anthony Hoffman. You can find me on Facebook at Anthony Hoffman, and my Instagram is at Tony Hoffman Chi. Tony Hoffman Chi.
And I am on the Twitter at Zach from Chicago. I'm on the Facebook at facebook.com/Zach Hughes. I'm also on YouTube, youtube.com/Zach Hughes. You can follow the podcast on the Twitter at Frustrated Grad, on YouTube at youtube.com/Frustrated Grads. And check out the audio version of the podcast on iTunes, Google Play Podcasts, Stitcher, Player.fm, and FrustratedGrad.com. Also, go to FrustratedGrad.com and click the PayPal link if you want to support this show and help us keep the lights on. So with that, I will say thanks for watching. If you're watching this on the internet, because YouTube is not the only place for videos on the internet. Remember that. And thanks for listening. And that's all you get for today. All right. So let's have a super short bonus time. Okay, so any titles that stand out to you?
Pepsi.
Pepsi. It's Pepsi, okay. That's what you hear at a lot of places if you are a liker of Coke and you just say, I want a Coke, and they say, it's Pepsi, okay?
No, it's never okay.
For me, it's the preference, but...
I mean, I'll drink Pepsi, but it's like, you know, I'd rather have Coke.
Like, I will drink, like, okay, here's, maybe we can find some common ground on this. Like, I will say cherry Coke is better than anything. Cherry Pepsi beats everything.
That's my go-to. I always go for that first.
Yeah.
Regular.
Yeah. Okay. So, see, that's what would have really unified people in that commercial if, Kendall Jenner handed the cop a cherry Pepsi, then everybody was like, yes, they really have their eye on the ball, because there's never been any real big promotion around cherry Pepsi. But anyway,
wild cherry Pepsi.
Oh, is there's wild cherry? I mean, same thing.
That's like the full name of it.
Okay.
Cherry Coke, wild cherry Pepsi.
Yeah. They have to be different. Okay. So Pepsi saves the world. That'd be the title.
Don't seem long of a hashtag.
It doesn't have to be the hashtag. It could be the title. We could come up with another.
Ah.
I'm trying to think.
Pepsi Mania. That was our issue from last week. Putting Mania at the end.
Yeah, we don't need Mania in this title this week. I'm trying to think. We talked Pepsi, Power Rangers, Pepsi Rangers, Pepsi Ragers. Is all the people who are mad about Pepsi. Let me see. Do. Bernie, feel the Bernie, have a Pepsi. Let me see. MTV Not Us Awards. That's not bad. Pepsi. I want my Pepsi. Like, I want my MTV. Pepsi, the cause and solution of all of life's problems. Let me see. All right. I say for time's sake, let's say you can tweet us with the hashtag Pepsi Mania. And what do you think about Pepsi Saves the World as the title? I mean, yeah, maybe if we think of something else after the fact, we'll change it.
Pepsi is the answer.
Pepsi is the answer. Is it like a suicide reference? Because I'm trying to think. There's something where it says suicide is the answer. Pepsi is the answer, or Pepsi is not the answer. Which one should it be?
Cops love Pepsi.
Cops love Pepsi. It's not that bad. Okay.
Pepsi solves racial profiling.
Pepsi solves racial profiling. Pepsi. Pepsicism. All right, let's do Pepsi is the answer. That's the tentative title. If you see something else on iTunes, then something happened. But right now, I'll say Pepsi is the answer is the title. Tweet us with the hashtag Pepsi Mania or any other hashtag that stood out to you throughout the course of this episode. Just tweet it at Frustrated Grad on Twitter. So that's the official end of this episode. I still haven't come up with a cool catchphrase for the outer outro. So have a Pepsi.